Welcome back to another edition of Kinda Christian. So, a question that we all wrestle with is when someone says, God told me to, how do you know that it's real and it's not indigestion? Well, we sat down with pastor, author, and speaker Sean Bowles. Now, Sean has sold over, I think, 500,000-600,000 books. This guy, very successful, and he helps teach people on how to hear God's voice in their life. So, if that statement alone just gives you pause, then this is probably the episode for you. Sean is a really interesting, very humble guy, open, very transparent. We ask him some tough questions about how he even knows what God's voice sounds like. I think you're really going to enjoy this interview. Sean Bowles. Sean Bowles.
Yes.
You have been called by some the most prophetic man in America. Did you know that?
No.
Then I don't know how prophetic you actually are.
Exactly.
I've been wanting. I was sitting on that one for a while. So that's been told to me. So I don't know if you've heard that, but
I hope that's not a big rumor.
That's right. Well, we'll see. We'll find out today. Actually, at the end, yeah. We'll see what the fans say. Tell us a little bit about your faith journey and how you became a Christian, which you are a Christian.
Yes, I'm a Christian.
Okay, good. I like it when pastors are Christian.
Yeah, it helps. It helps a lot when you're leading not cultishly. It's right. Great. My parents were my dad's a colonel in the Air Force, and my mom was a stay-at-home mom, and they were Catholic, and they loved the Catholic Church still to this day, but they didn't have a personal relationship with Jesus at the time when my brother got leukemia and died, and he died through like a operation, and during that time, they actually saw an angel, and it changed their whole life. They both didn't believe in the supernatural in a major way. They believe in God in a real way, but they didn't believe in the supernatural like on this side of eternity. And so it's their story. Like, I always get some of the details wrong because it's their story. Like, even when I wrote it in one of the books that I did, I had to like call them and say, is this right? You know, but it just profoundly impacted them where they were like, oh my gosh. And they never asked the question, why didn't it happen before? They just were so comforted by this experience. And they ended up going back to their, you know, their Catholic place. And there was a priest there that was practicing what they call charismatic Catholic tradition, which means they believe the Holy Spirit still moves and heals and does stuff now. So my parents got really involved with that. And then my dad got transferred. And when they got transferred out to Orange County. And I think it was like a civilian base at the time. And I was a little kid. And it was pretty profound because they ended up finding a church there that was a pretty well-known church. It was during the Jesus People movement. Even though I looked very young, I was alive then. And I was a little kid, but I was alive then. And so Jesus People Movement was one of the great worldwide revivals that had over, I think, 16 or 17 million people saved all in one generation from different churches, different groups. It wasn't like one church is centered around, but there was a high focus on Southern California. One of the groups that was involved with it was called The Vineyard. And so in the early days when it was still Calvary Chapel with Chuck Smith, John Wimber split off and he started The Vineyard. It was already a denomination, but he took it over. And my parents got really involved with it. And so I just grew up around loving Jesus and seeing a lot of people give their lives to Jesus. And it just framed and shaped me. My parents weren't pastors, but I was still around ministry. They did kind of what they call lay leadership in those days, which is they always led groups. They helped lead in different aspects. And I just saw God do so many things as a child that I just never left. I never left the belief.
So would you say, faith was not necessarily imparted to you, but it was around you and
there's a culture of it. And my parents would include us in everything they were doing. So they weren't like hands off. A lot of times you see people who are first generation Christians or people who are older and they have children. A lot of times there's a huge disconnect between the children and the parents' faith. And for us, my parents would say, hey, we're going to pray for people tonight after the meeting. Do you want to pray with us? Or, hey, let's go to an old folks home. And at the time, this is what they called them, you know, convalescent center or whatever. And let's go once a month. And you guys want to like sing songs with us with these people and like just pray for them and love on them. And so we were just included from the time we were little. And we never felt afflicted by it. We kind of had to go regardless, but they didn't make us do anything. They were like, you can color in the corner and play with whatever your toys you brought where you can hang out with us. And both my sisters and I, we just loved to see what love would do and see what God's kindness could do. And so we were pretty touched early on. I saw a couple miracles from just the environment we were in where I saw people who were healed. And so I knew that was a reality. I didn't know how real it could be. I didn't know how regular it could be, but I just saw it and it just deeply impacted me. Plus I felt I had my own relationship to really hearing God's voice, but it was never like a prophetic thing. That's like when you say prophet, it's like, that wasn't part of our equation. And that whole pattern of the church wasn't part of, we didn't even know there was a such thing. And that we knew in the Bible there was something, but we didn't know modern times there could be people who were more imbued, so to speak, in that kind of gift. So I wasn't thinking of myself that way. We just lived in a culture of people who believed they could hear God, and things would happen that wouldn't have happened if they didn't hear from God.
So at a young age, you were surrounded and sort of it fostered this expectancy,
yeah,
if you will. You said miracles. So, I mean, it's a touchy subject.
Yeah,
you know, it's a question of like, do we see miracles? So you would say miracles happen today.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. And not like, you know, we also obviously kids born miracle of life, but yeah, we're talking miracle, like to your eyes, there is no other explanation for
I've
what
had
happens.
Miracles happen. Yeah. So, okay. I mean, I think it's people who don't believe or come from a skeptical viewpoint or have never understood God for what he wanted to do, what he did through Jesus, and what he still wants to do before Jesus returns, it's hard for them to believe that God wants to bring supernatural help to us. That's not just in our character or just in our talent or just to enhance us, that he actually wants to bring help to us beyond that at times. And so for me, I you know, used to do a lot of extreme missions and go to red light districts and war zones and these kinds of things. One of the places I went to in South America, I got a parasite that had never been in America before. I was around 26, 27 years old. And so I was degenerating really fast in my body to the point where I went on hospice care. And the doctor said you could do this in the hospital or at home because they wanted to monitor me for some stuff because they had put me on experimental chemo. And that was also killing me because it was just so intense.
And how old were you when this
happened? I was like 26, 27.
Yikes.
And about 5 weeks after they told me I would die, because they said you're going to die within 5 weeks type thing. And then five more weeks happened. And I was really sick. And I had every kind of people praying for me, like charismatic Catholics and Christians and just all kinds of people, just because I was open to receive prayer. And all of a sudden, one day, I had a moment where I knew I was supposed to go to my parents' house. I just had an internal knowing, which I think is one of the ways God speaks to us. And they lived about 5 miles away, and I hadn't driven in like 3 months. And so I was home alone, and I got my dogs in my car because it was snowing outside, and I wanted to make sure if I was gone for a couple of days that they would be, because I didn't know if I could get back very easily. And so I brought my dogs, and when I went there, they were actually having a meeting with a woman who had come from a ministry that focuses on healing. I didn't know that. And it was like 9:30, so it was after the meeting was done, like a whole meeting. And she said, I came here for you. God showed me you in a vision before I came here. And she didn't know who I was. Well, she did know me, but she didn't know I was sick, how I was sick. And she said, and I didn't have a reputation or anything. I was just, you know, one of the people in this group. And so she prayed for me, and I felt something. It was almost like she pulled out a worm. And I know parasites can look like worms, but it was parabolic or metaphorical. And I went back and got tested the next week, and the parasite had died. Just completely was gone out of my body. And my doctor was a Christian. He said, this is a miracle. We couldn't do it. Nothing we were working on did it. I mean, it was past chemo. Nothing was working. He goes, your life's a miracle. What are you going to do now that God gave you your life back? And I was like, give it to him even more, you know, like, so I've had a couple of miracles like that where in my own body, like I can't deny what he's done. And I think when you have that, when people start to do all their arguments, they can't argue away your own life experience.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the reasons why I believe, is because I've been so personally touched by this in that way.
So the doctor, to immediately get healed, and the doctor goes, Sean, now that you've won your life back, like, what are you going to do now?
Yeah.
I mean, just puts it on there. Also, you said this parasite had never been in the United States.
Yeah.
Has it now named Sean Bowles, or did you get any
no,
sort of
I didn't get any credit.
Award or any? I mean,
no,
it
was already named. It was a named parasite.
Okay.
So it's anonymous. The name's like this long, and so I can't even tell you. Like, I'm really bad with names.
Okay.
So.
Well, I was hoping there was some redemptive. No. Aside from the healing, there might have been, you know, something could have happened there. All right. So you mentioned that story. You know, this woman said that God had led her and talked to her. And then this is something that you're just, you know, you're known for. You're known for as a teacher who speaks on this touchy subject of hearing from God, right? Brings up a lot of emotions for a lot of people.
Oh, we're like the horror movie sub bad guy in every, you know,
that's
Hollywood
right.
movie.
You
so
know,
it's
right.
like
a lot of that.
Yeah.
But you know, I don't know many of the people we've interviewed who would go as far as say God doesn't speak, but you believe God speaks today.
Mm-hmm.
And for you personally, as someone who has sort of, this has become a lot of your professional work as well as a pastor and teaching on this subject, What is it like for God to speak to you? You believe God speaks. How does he speak to you? What is that experience like?
Well, I'll say two ways, because I think everyone's a little different in how they experience God. But I think we have in common that we're wired for it. We're wired for that kind of connection. And so, you know, you have this God of the universe who can't fit into time and space, and yet the Bible tells us he lives inside of us when we invite him in. And we're sharing the same space. And 1 Corinthians 2, to me, is the clearest place. And this is where I find my own experience, which is, verse 9 and on, it says, like, no ear has heard, no eye has seen what God has in store for those who love him, which is kind of an Old Testament spinoff. But then Paul addresses it and says, but we know those things by his Spirit. And the Spirit of God searches the deeps or the depths of God, the Father, and he relates those depths to us. Like, he's standing between the two spaces and connecting them. And so I think a lot of the way that most Christians here, including myself, is through impressions or intuition or instinct, but also it's a little bit beyond your normal experience of instinct and intuition, where you just know something you wouldn't have known before. As a matter of fact, the gifts of the Holy Spirit, the word of knowledge, or the word of wisdom, like, knowledge means knowledge that came not from your life experience or your education, but it came from the Spirit. So it gets downloaded into you, so to speak. You know, all of a sudden you know something you didn't know before. And the word of wisdom would be Sophia, which means knowing how to, like, understand what's in God's heart, or regulate your relationship with God, or understand what God's thinking about the world around you. And so I think we should expect those things. Just certain people wouldn't believe they're so, that they could be either so practical or that they could be so supernaturally natural, meaning, like, God knows the hair on everyone's head. But if all of a sudden you tell someone what's in their safe or what's, you know, what's going on in their marriage relationship by revelation, it's spooky to a lot of people, unless you feel the love motivation of God behind it, where he's come to resolve or help or give encouragement. And then it might still be spooky, but you feel helped, you feel loved. The problem is, most of the people, the way it's been presented, is that it's going to shame you, or it's going to cause something to happen that no one wants to happen in the first place. Like, God's going to declare a judgment, there's going to be an earthquake, or God hates this group of people, so he's going to destroy them. And so we've seen that model throughout movies and history and all the bad. I mean, like, anybody who goes after any of the supernatural gifts, you get tons of accusations, and it's on a financial, sexual, emotional, pastoral, every kind of accusation you could think of, because people are so afraid of these subjects that you get aligned with everything that's come before you that was negative.
Hmm. So what is the actual experience like when you feel like you're hearing from God? Is that an image in your head? Is it a sense? And I know that you probably can't speak for how all people throughout all space and time hear from God.
Yeah.
But what is that experience like for Sean Bowles?
A lot of just thoughts that come within my own thought realm that are outside of what I would normally think about. Like, the first way that I really learned how to hear from God was about, like, my resources, like time or energy and that kind of thing, or about money, resources. So I was young, I was a kid, and there was times that I would feel prompted to give somebody something or to spend time with somebody, that, like, a nerd at school that, like, just didn't have, you know, we all looked at it as, like, a really nerdy person, but they actually were a really broken person. And as I invested the resource of my time in obedience to God, I would see restoration in their life, to where they would become solid as a person, and they would come out of that class of rejection and victimization, and they would come into a place of, like, wholeness. And so for me, a lot of the way I hear would be just impressions or thoughts. I would feel like all of a sudden I would feel compassion that wasn't common to my own heart or my own life experience, or I would sense something, or I'd have a mental picture that was kind of like, you know, I'd think of someone I really loved in my life all of a sudden, and I'd look at a person and be like my sister Jennifer, like, I really love Jennifer. And I'd look at someone and I'd be like, is your name Jennifer? And they'd be like, no. Are you super artistic and creative? Yeah. And I'm like, oh, okay, because my sister is really creative. And that's what the first thing I would think about her. So I'd more investigate it, versus some people who you've seen a model of prophecy in the church that's been like, God has told me, thus saith the Lord, which isn't all bad, but it's a very specific model that came out in a lot of the early, mainly from the 70s, 50s to 80s. There was groups that were teaching it that it was all Old Testament language, a biblical, like, King James language. And for me, it's more of an intuitive process. And I have heard from God. I've heard a voice, like an internal audible voice, an external audible voice. But, you know, this sounds controversial.
You have heard an external audible voice.
I have.
And that's the exception, not the rule, right?
Oh, very much so. It's been a few times in my life.
Okay.
And which is more so than most people that I'm friends with, like even major pastors who believe in this. And so, but they, when you hear God, I think in those kinds of ways, there's a different result that it brings on the earth through whatever you're hearing it for. It was never for something that was super common. It was for something that was profound that happened.
Now, this whole idea of hearing from God, is this a major divide in the church, or is this tied up in, because I know from some research that there's a divide in the church over whether or not supernatural things occur today. It seems that most would say that, you know, no one would say God can't do anything, right? Yeah. God's capable. But it seems that the church is divided into people who think these things happen with more frequency, and others who think that this kind of stuff, like hearing from God, prophecy, is not really around today. So yeah, can you talk about this divide?
Absolutely, because I think there's like 2.4 billion people are Christians on the earth at least right now, right? So depending on where you look at statistics. And when Azusa Street happened, which was an early church revival here centered around Southern California, that's when you have the Pentecostal birth of Pentecostal movement, which things like the Assemblies of God and other types of major church movements that were, you know, Amos and McPherson followed shortly after that. She was one of the most famous Christians in history, modern history. So you have all these like Pentecostal groups that spun off. Well, out of that, there's about 770 million people. So that's a great percentage of that 2.whatever billion people who believe in hearing from God, believe in praying for the sick, believe in, you know, that God can bring miracles. Probably the majority of the 2 billion believe that God could do something supernatural. It's just they don't have an expectation that would happen or that you could partner your faith to it. They are waiting for God to do something for them versus having that, what I would call more of an attitude of sonship, like where, you know, God came through Jesus and Jesus gave his life for us. And then he restored us to God's original intention, and that he came to restore all things, and he modeled supernatural culture and natural culture, how the kingdom of God both could affect natural things, but it could also bring supernatural resolutions to spiritual issues that there's just no way to get resolved in our lifetime, whether it's something big like immorality, you know, and that's one of the first ways that people learn who are almost all Christians could agree with this. Like, I know right now I'm being convicted to not do something that I would normally do in my own patterns. And so God's reforming me from the inside, but they don't call that God's voice. But that's one of the ways we're wired when we become a Christian, is to not feel guilt and shame, but to feel like an invitation to be a higher version of ourselves. And so we get called to repentance, which means change, and also to take responsibility for what we've done wrong. And that's really God speaking. That's really one of the ways that God even defines in the Bible that he'll come to us, that the Holy Spirit will change us from the inside out. And so I think a lot of it, because of the spookiness of, and some of the extremism that's happened with people who believe in prophecy, that it's created an exhaustion in people. And also there's been so much imbalance. A lot of it's been centered around people using supernatural encounters to gain wealth or power or authority, or to have a lot of immorality stuff that's happened around control and power trips. But there's some things that are closing the gap right now that's very unique in our generation, because at least in America specifically, we have our vice president believes he hears from God, Mike Pence. We have Kanye West, who's emerged from a mental breakdown and got saved and is actually leading now in a way that not only is he leading, you know, these crusades or whatever you want to call them, like these concerts that he's trying to get people saved, but he's also hiring people out of jail for his new property in Wyoming, where they're doing seed to sow, and he wants to affect agriculture and fashion industry with sustainable clothing. So his faith isn't just like theoretical, or it's not just, you know, proverbial. It's actually like practical, even though he believes God's speaking to him, leading him. And so it's a real example. You have people like Steph Curry in basketball, who's really feeling like him and his wife are hearing from God or being led by God in some ways. So we're seeing it in places of culture we've never quite seen it this much before. And you can see it. I mean, I have a podcast called Exploring the Prophetic, and I have people from all genres on it, politicians and entertainers and business people, who are sharing like really profound stories in their industry or their authority, where they've heard from God and it actually changed their life and the world around them.
So it's becoming a more, would you say that a more normative experience for Christians to say, yeah, God's speaking? Is that becoming more acceptable?
It is. I think it's more acceptable. I think some of the extremes are still as resisted, and even some of the, you know, we majored for a couple of years on words of knowledge, which a word of knowledge would be knowing something about a person's current or past, and then what God thinks about it. So you're calling out something. It almost looks like, to some people who don't understand what it is, it might look like a psychic reading or something, because you're saying, your name's Ryan. And they're saying, oh my gosh, my name is Ryan. How do you know my name? Because God knows everything. And words of knowledge in the right context, when it's not so showy and it's not like on a platform, when you're just going up to somebody at a bus stop and you're saying, hey, I'm a Christian, can I pray for you? Yeah, do you have a sister who's going through something that's really hard? That right there is like the best form and use for it.
So you do it in a questioning manner. And so biblically, when Jesus, with the story, when Jesus approached the woman at the well, mm-hmm. and he had insight into her marriages, et cetera.
There's like four words of knowledge.
So that's word of knowledge. Yeah. And then obviously she went away changed from that because he knew something. Yeah.
There's like 60 or 65 of them in the Bible.
Okay.
Where words of knowledge came out.
Now I noticed when you talk about it, you seem to have, you approach it like, can I pray for you? It's implied that there's a bit of vagueness to it, right? It's questioning. You're not coming across saying, you're not approaching someone on the bus saying, thus saith the Lord, yeah. I, his prophet, his chosen vessel, have chosen you to...
Well, no, because that's the breakdown, right? Because then it creates an us and them, and I have a power to give you something, and I'm the one who's profound versus God. And so, like, we got to disarm anything that puts a wedge between us and someone else. And I've even changed in the last 2 years. Like if you go on YouTube and you see a lot of the way I ministered with from platforms, or I was calling people out in a prophecy as a model. I was really doing it as a model. I wasn't trying to be seen that way. I was just showing people what's available. But I've even changed that because I feel like it became too showy, or people were like, they started to get expectation. Like, I'm going to be the next Sean Bowles from a platform and prophesy over people. Like, that should be a ministry. And I was like, that's not that what I was trying to model. What I was trying to model was we can go places and see people in view of God's love for them and know things about their lives that help spring resolution. Because ultimately, most Christians would agree that mediums and psychics may bring some form of encouragement, but it doesn't spiritually resolve spiritually rooted issues that are really between God and man, or from the enemy and man. We believe in a devil, so between the devil and man. And when you're a Christian, you could help bring spiritual resolution to each other, and you could actually stop patterns in people's lives that are wrong together with them, or you could help introduce them in ways to God that actually brings something that they didn't have available to them before. So maybe it's in their marriage, or maybe it's with their children. And I, you know, I'm with the flight attendant on one of the planes, I was sitting next to a guy who's like really, you know, kimchi breath, like very gross, and alcohol, and just whatever. And it was so bad that I couldn't even stay seated next to him for 5 hours. I kept kind of, and there was, the plane was full, so I kept getting up. So the flight attendant was like, "I know it's bad. I'm so sorry." He's snoring really loud. "I'm so sorry you're sitting next to him. That guy's like an alcoholic or something. I'm so sorry." I was like, "Well, I'm just using this time. I'm a Christian. I'm just using this time to kind of pray. Do you think, you know, do you need prayer?" Because most people say yes, sure. Most people. It depends on. Oh, we live in a very unique time. Depending on where you're at, but for America, it's people are hungry, you know. And so she's like, "Oh my gosh, my son's going through so much right now, and he's, you know,
well, she just opened up then,
living with his girlfriend. And could you just pray for me?" And I started saying, "Is this a scenario of what's going on? Like where she's kind of turned him against you, and you don't have a real relationship with him anymore?" And she's like, "How did?" And I had a couple of the details, and she's like, "How did you know that?" I said, "No, you asked me to pray, and immediately God showed me He wants to give your son's heart back to you and your heart back to your son. And that this girl has been a wedge, and she's let him into some stuff. I don't want to say what it is, but like some bad patterns in his life. And that none of us would want our children to be involved with." And she's like, "Absolutely." I said, "Well, I feel like God's showing me, and you could tell me, here's my phone number. God's showing me that she's going to be out of his life. Even by the time we're landing, that they're having a talk tonight, and that she's gonna be out of his life soon, if not tonight. And that God wants to give you your son's heart back. And that like, there's something about his life moving forward. Like God's answering your prayers. He's not making that happen, but your son's making the right choices over this." And when she got home, it wasn't her son who made the choices. Actually, the girl broke up with her son kind of as a power play, but he was like, "I don't want to ever get back together with her again." And he realized what had happened. So, wow. You know, this is just a woman on a plane. And I think like how many of us are concerned about so many things. And when you have Christians who believe God cares about everything, and we're available for prayer through issues. It's like, I have, you know, team members on our team who they're just everyday people. We don't have anyone who's full-time ministry on our prophetic team, that I think maybe a couple pastors, and they just do this like as a regular part of their life. They're looking to encourage people in their friendship circle, but then also outside their friendship circle. And they just ask people for prayer. So we're praying, and then we're praying with prophetic intention. We're not trying to start with prophecy. We're starting with, let's connect to you with God.
Right.
And then if there's something prophetic that comes up, that's great. But I think the model of like dominating prophecy is really unhealthy a lot of times.
So more importantly, what happened to the guy with the kimchi breath?
I have no idea.
Bummer.
I stayed away from him.
Okay. So his prayer has its limits. So that's what
I did pray that it would go
that's
away.
That's what I'm hearing here.
Yeah.
All right. So you mentioned that you've mentioned transformation, renewal, solving a spiritual issue. I wanted to ask you how we actually know something is from God. Are there guardrails we put on this?
Yeah.
And then how do we look back and say that was from God? What you mentioned, fruit and inward change and rule. So do results dictate that?
Well, a couple things. I mean, I think we got to look at our relationship with God as we look at our relationships that are healthy with great people in our life. And we're in our relationships with great people, we have fruit from those relationships that are actually, we benefit from because we sacrifice and serve in a different way, healthy relationships, and they serve us in a different way. Like my wife and I, like our relationship has fruit to it, and it causes me to live in more peace, and it causes me to live in more connection to myself as I'm trying to serve and help her. And so I think a lot of times we're looking for this fruit that like we're waiting. A lot of people do like the old fashioned Gideon fleece, like if you'll do this, God, I'll do this. And then they're looking for like, it has to be powerful in my viewpoint and vantage point, how I see this fulfilled, or I'll never listen to you again. I won't believe myself again or whatever. But I think the reality is that the Old Testament, we had one of the primary ways people would lead the whole tribe of Israel or the whole people of Israel was by prophets. And the New Testament, the primary way he's leading is by our own individual faith in him. You know, Moses said, I wish they were all prophets, that they all heard you this way. And that was God's desire, is that we would all have our own, like just like Martin Luther, you know, said we would be justified by our own faith. That applies to prophetic principles too. Like, we're supposed to be led by our own faith in God, our own relationship to the Bible, and our own relationship to the Spirit. We need other people. Absolutely. We need other people's interpretation of the scriptures and other people's interpretation of our life experience and our encounters with God. But at the same time, if we were on a desert island, we could still have a successful relationship with God and to ourselves and the whole thing. You know, it's like we could still be formed somewhat. I don't think we'd be like Castaway or Tom Hanks if you actually have a sense of who God is. You could actually have a level of fulfillment in who he is, even if there was the loneliness of life type thing until you get rescued type thing. But I would say the guardrails are, we're looking for, especially when you're first learning how to hear from God, and you know that we're all able to hear from God. John 14 through 16, Jesus prophesies that the Holy Spirit would come and reveal all these things from the Father to us. So like, the problem is most of us come when we're saved or when we're awakened or open up to the fact that God wants to speak to us, and we bring our top three things to him, and then we expect him to speak about those things, and we don't realize he has an agenda as well. And so then a lot of times out of our own desire, we hear for those things. So marriage, money, you know, whatever, if there's a healing need, if there's someone going through something really hard. And so, you know, when I was a teenager, I was like, okay, God, tell me who I'm going to marry so I don't have to worry about that one.
As a teenager.
And I look across the room and there's a girl that's the prettiest girl in the youth group type thing. I'm like, she's the one. I know she's the one. And I just was convinced. And she's obviously not the one. And we, you know, dated a little bit. She was kind of have to date me for a little while.
Oh, but you still prettiest girl in the room you got to date.
Yeah, it was very nice. But, nice, you know, man. And so we dated for a little bit, but it wasn't there. And there's a big story behind it, but it wasn't there. And it was really the voice of my desire that was looking for something that could just resolve something that God really gave me as a human male to learn about who I am and who I'd want to choose. And he doesn't want to violate a lot of those processes a lot of times. I'm not saying God won't speak to us about who we're supposed to marry, but I don't think that's the common. And I think most people who start to believe in the prophetic, they put a God card on everything. They want God to speak to them about what to wear in the morning. And that's one of the things that really bugs me, as far as like, I actually think God's more powerful when we make powerful choices with him, because it's like a father. If I'm 16 and I'm trying to decide who to date, I might ask my dad some questions, my mom some questions. But if I'm 36 and I'm like, tell me who to date, it actually makes them look like they didn't form me or help me in those critical times when I was young. It actually doesn't bring them honor. It actually makes them look bad as parents.
So you're saying it's possible to lean too much on God?
It's possible to over-spiritualize every opportunity.
Okay, that makes sense.
And not trust the character that he's putting inside of us through our relationship to the Word and through our relationship of developing our internal self. And so I think his voice sometimes becomes a crutch or a place that we want to go to solve problems that we don't feel very empowered to solve. And so I think that's where we've had a lot of the problems, where people don't have good boundaries. Sometimes we're like, okay, I know God wants me to be a millionaire, where there's only, you know, 6% of Americans are millionaires. And every young Christian business person is like, I'm believing for my piece of that pie. And then they start to pray. If they're in a prophetic culture or a culture where they do prayer ministry like this, a lot of times all prophesy over each other. It's like, you can't just say, hey, I feel like there's some, you know, we live in LA, there's some acting on your life. They'll say, I see you as Meryl Streep and I see the Academy Award. And that person then can't just enjoy the process of becoming an actor, that God put something inside of them to express creativity. And their mind now, there's no enjoyment to anything until they get to become the Academy Award winner, which will probably never happen. That was never God's intention. But the person who's receiving it doesn't feel comfortable enough to not put an upgrade or an exaggeration on it, to just say, hey, God made you from before time began, it says, for good works. And one of the things you're going to do that you're going to find the most life in is acting. And that's enough. And you see these prophets who are like, you will be the next Bill Gates, or you will be the, you know, and the person's like, oh, okay. And then they didn't create computer systems.
Bill Gates or bust, pretty much.
Yeah. And I think that that's where the guardrails have to be put up, is like, we unfortunately exaggerate. I did it when I was growing in the, you know, hearing God's voice, especially in my younger years. Like, I feel like I exaggerated, or like I wanted an enhanced experience because I wanted people to view me as the one who called out. I want to be able to tell people stories and say, I prophesied to them, and they started that whole career life, and I had the wrong goals. And like, as I grew, and just as a human, as someone who really loves God, I didn't want to be responsible for his glory and his story. I wanted to just be you know, a servant, just like when I was serving in missions and I was feeding people, like many times, or feeding homeless people downtown, I wanted the prophetic to be like, not about me. I wasn't the one providing all the food most of the time. I was just one of the cogs in the machine of love towards these people, of acts of compassion. So when you thought about what God was doing there, you didn't see Sean Bowles, you saw the overarching theme of who Jesus is and who Christians are as more, not autonomous at all, or anonymous at all, but as part of a bigger system that it's about Jesus, not about us. And so I feel like a lot of the prophetic gets hyped, and it gets, and then prophetic personalities emerge that are more like celebrity superstars. Just like we have a superstar culture in American Christianity a lot. And so I think, and then you put the prophetic on it, and then anything that somebody does, who's, that's what, one of the things I hate the label for. If I have video game characters behind me, you know, my shelves, they're like, there's a guy with a sword. Does he play violent video games? Oh my gosh, I totally don't believe in that guy anymore. He's totally like, you know, and there just becomes this, for something that we don't agree on, that becomes our blockade. Totally. Or if there's a controversy or a scandal, like this group decides to judge because of this reason. I mean, I've had so many scandals in my life that aren't, I don't even pay attention to them, because they're not like, they're, it's usually a rumor that comes here that ends up operating all the way around here, you know?
Well, let me ask you about that, because that's something, so you mentioned celebrity status, and you know, it's funny, the Bible mentions multiple gifts, you know, like you don't see people becoming the celebrity administrator, right? Like look at that person, they've got, yes, you know, amazing organizational skills. Look,
well,
at that
Stephen,
conference.
He was, yeah, a deacon.
Yeah, right. But Stephen, you know, people want the words of knowledge, yeah, and these are the sexier gifts, right? I mean, yeah, it would be, frankly, it would be a really cool party trick if I could go out and, you know, just have words of knowledge about people, especially the prettiest girl in the room. You know, that's, yeah, that's great. But so, I mean, it seems like no matter what throughout history, anyone who seems to be doing the work of God will have some detractors, and you've had, you know, your share of detractors. What do you say to people who say like, this is crazy, man? Like, you know, and I've been to conference center, and I've seen you call people up out of the stands, and you know, you've gotten words of knowledge around someone's birthday, around just like bits of knowledge about them, and they feel so known, et cetera. What do you say when people say, ah, gosh, you know what? You could look this stuff up. It's not real. I've seen in community threads, it's always a small but vocal, yeah, minority who are like, this is great. You're crazy. You Christians are, you know, being strange. This is, yeah, what do you say to that?
In some ways I agree. It does feel strange. Like, I get it. Like I'm first a skeptic in my own self. Like a lot of times when something new emerges in Christianity that feels like, you know, it doesn't matter if it's a supernatural type thing or if it's a new movement, I'm like, oh, those guys are just like famous because they're music or whatever. You know, it's like there's this place inside of me that is a cynic that I work myself into hope and I work myself into faith, because I choose not to see what people are doing wrong, what the enemy's doing, what, you know, just because humanity is so ugly sometimes until you see it from God's vantage point. And when you see people from God's vantage point, like Jesus looked at us and said, these are the joys set before me. And so I think with those threads and that, you know, we live in the information age. So revelation, a lot of stuff, if it's not prophecy of the future, if it's about something from the now, someone could say, you looked on Facebook or you, and which is one of the constant comments for words and all insight prophecy. And there's a lot of people who've had that temptation. All of us have had the temptation to enhance our words no matter what. But there's a lot of people who have failed in that, especially, you know, in the current kind of iteration of hearing God's voice. There's a lot of people who just, they wanted to be awesome. Their desire to be awesome was more than their desire to love. And that's very human. That's very, you know, and that's, it's one of the mistakes that people have made. But then you look at, like, if your motivation is I'm going to love people and this is one of the tools for love versus I'm going to become something because of this tool. Like, I'm going to create an identity around this tool. I call myself the reluctant prophetic guy because I'm like, I've never wanted to be branded by this. And this was never the space that I wanted it to go to the cross for. And so it's always been hard when I get criticism. I'm like, I know, right? Like, I feel that way too. I feel like a lot of people.
The Reluctant Prophet,
this,
though, is a good name. I mean, I think you registered that on
that could
GoDaddy,
be my bio, you know? But, you know, and I don't want to sound like I don't love what I, you know, right, that part of my life. It's like, to me, it's 1/4 of my identity, but right now it's the most visible one. So people see that as part of my whole world. And I feel like, and my whole world, it's just, you know, my conversation behind the scenes is, how's God transforming culture? What's God doing here? It's not centered around who has God healed and how many people have you prophesied over. It's like that.
But people want that, though. I mean, that inevitably, because like people want miracles. I mean, that's a biblical thing, yeah, right? I mean, throughout history, everyone wants to see the big,
but
flashy,
I think,
stuff,
if,
right?
Once you start to have the greater conversation, they become a thread woven in, but they're not the major, they're a minor. Right. And it's their gift and they're a tool. And so I've spent a lot of years now helping people to understand that tool set and the gift of discernment, the gift of word of wisdom, the gift of word of knowledge, the gift of prophecy. Those are gifts in 1 Corinthians 13. I've helped a lot of people understand that. And so sometimes people decide, I want it my whole life to revolve around this, which I don't even want that. I mean, there's people out there that's okay to want that, but it's going to be a very small little group of people. One of the things that was interesting to me is when we released Transcending God, which is kind of my book I'm known for. And you know, in that market of that little niche market of hearing God's voice, the biggest book in like a 1 year history of sales was back in the, I think it was in the early 90s, and it sold like 70,000 copies on Hearing God's Voice. And that was like by a major author who was really well known from Dallas Theological Seminary named Jack Deere. He did a great job.
Oh yeah.
So, I love that book. And so for all these other years, most people who sell prophetic books, maybe on hearing God's voice, like to define prophecy, not maybe encounters and stuff, but to just define prophecy, maybe 15,000 is a bestseller in that genre, in that little niche. And so when we were going to release Transcending God, I was like, you guys, I'm going to speak into Christianity and really talk about like, how do we love culture with our faith? Like, how do we actually like present the Jesus who's so beautiful to culture? And my publisher, my wife, both said, serve the audience that you're in who's really hungry for you to define some of this encounter you've been having with hearing God's voice. And right, and so I said, okay, I want people to learn how to translate who God is through the relationship with him to the world around them, but also to really know him themselves, and prophecy helps you to do that. And so when I released this book, we sold like 140,000 in the first year. And I was like, what in the heck? Like, even my publisher was like, we didn't know that this was like a theme. And then I had one of the biggest publishers come after me, and they said, let's do a book at HarperCollins. And they said, let's do a book about this, because like in a greater audience and see, because we had a survey amongst our readers. They have thousands of people, pastors and stuff. And they said, what are you most interested in? So our number one subject for kind of not just the mainstream two issues is usually health. And this year it was hearing God's voice. And so we pursued you to
find
out.
But not just Christian, you're saying just across?
No, Christian, in the Christian world. And so it's usually Christians want to know something about health, as far as not the main issues of Christianity, if it's like one of the sub. And so they're like, would you do a book with us? And I was like, sure. And we just released it last year. It's called Through the Eyes of Love, which is kind of a follow-up to Transcending God. And again, it sold really well. And I was just like, and I thought, this is so weird, because I'm like, I just wanted to do like one and done. I just want to love people. I want them to have this tool. But people were really hungry, and it wasn't the people who are hungry for our ministry aren't people who are hungry for like the ministries that teach and how to raise up prophets as much. Like those people like will come around us and like, oh, you're too basic. Like you're way too basic. And but the people who come around us are people who are like business people. They're evangelicals who've been conservative, but they're like, I have heard from God, or I've had some dreams that I need interpretation for. There are people who are in politics, or people who are like, wait, you're talking about God in culture, not just God building the church or God doing something that's just spiritually focused. You know, you're talking about God doing something naturally focused. So it's been really unique to me, because I've always wanted it to be a conversationalist in the transformation kind of conversations of what God does. Not necessarily a leading voice, because I don't know, you can't plan that, but you can be a conversationalist. And so the fact that that's happened, and the fact that my story now, I've actually tried to decrease my story, just tell it as far as an example for what's available, not to be an example as far as like a lord over, like I'm a father in this. I'm just an example. Let me brother you. Let me love you. If I father you somehow, great. But you can only mentor so many people. It happens through real life, you know. But we started a mentoring platform in the sense of like, let's mentor the culture of this, how to hear from God. It's been really interesting to watch the types of people who've engaged us. Thousands of people have engaged our mentoring platform, and they're hearing God in real ways. And it's normal in their culture of life. It's supernaturally natural, meaning God's resolving natural things in their life. He's helping them to understand who they are. He's helping them to get over smoking and addiction or these kinds of things that they tried every other type of route, the declaration prayer route, this book, this Celebrate Recovery, this. And all of a sudden they just have, like they see what God designed. Like one lady was saying, I saw myself in my 80s and 90s, and I'm in my 50s now, and I know if I smoke as much as I do now, I won't live to there, but I saw myself for my grandchildren and my role that I would play for them and helping to keep some of the spirituality and the prayer alive for their lives, and I just can't smoke anymore because I won't be alive for them, and I know that. It just came into me that I knew that, and I just stopped smoking. Hasn't been a temptation. So these are the kinds of people who, these are the kinds of people who are like, I just love those stories. I love those stories where someone's like, God knows me and he has a plan for me. And when you hear God, you get a cheat sheet for what that plan is.
Cheat sheet. I like that. Would God call it a cheat sheet?
No.
God doesn't like cheating. No. So, all right. So we've mentioned that it comes as impressions. It comes in, it's
visions, dreams,
I mean, all these different ways. So why does God do it this way? Like why? I mean, you in the Old Testament, you've got God appearing as a burning bush.
Yeah.
He has some pretty, you know, Ezekiel has this insane revelation of a four-headed, you know, winged, you know, creature.
Yeah.
You know, and then in the New Testament, it seems like there's a stark contrast, and I can appreciate an outsider going, well, you know, it seems when God spoke, it was pretty profound and people like would cower down. And the New Testament, it's like, well, I see, you know, I have this image and like I see like birthday candles. I mean, just like some really abstract, weird stuff.
Why, I think it's both and. I mean, I think everything that God's done in the Bible is a presence for what he can still do. And other than the cross and the resurrection, that's like a once and for all. You know, but everything in the Bible, it's like Jesus never did the same miracle twice because he was showing us that, first of all, he's a creator like Genesis 1, but also that he wanted us to walk with God and he wanted to show us that this is not a formula. As a matter of fact, when Jesus came on the earth, people were looking for, like, Solomon was a messianic picture. So Solomon had built the city infrastructure, the temple, that the greatest resources known to man were brought together in his generation. Like, you have this incredible picture of Solomon, who a lot of the Jews believed Jesus was going to return, and that was, he was going to be the modern day Solomon. Like, that's what the Messiah picture would look like. And he comes and he tells them stories and parables. Like, he comes and says, the kingdom of heaven is like, and he doesn't directly appoint anyone generals, and when they ask to be his generals, he's like, I can't do that for you, only God could appoint you. Is that, like, he came because he wanted to bring an internal culture. And I love, I think it's Matthew 18:18, where he says, they said, why are you speaking in all these riddles and parables, and why do you speak this way? He said, because I'm trying to create like a receptive insight inside of you, because if I speak to you directly, you'll stare it in the face until doomsday comes and you won't believe. So I think there's something about, especially modern culture, because we're so like Greek minded, we're so intellectual. Modern culture, if we just intellectually know who God is, then we'll figure it out and we'll do it in our own strength. We see a lot of churches doing that. They're like, literally, they can have church and the Holy Spirit doesn't even have to be involved. You know, like, they can have church and you never know if God was even there. They just are a great community center meeting community needs. And we can't just be a community center. We have to be an upgrade to that. We actually have to meet spiritual needs too, not just community needs. And I love places that are meeting community needs, because that's like far more sometimes than a lot of the charismatic places who think they're meeting spiritual needs and they're not doing anything. But there has to be, I know I'm like, slam. No, I'm just kidding. But there has to be this place inside of us that understands, you speak to me. It's that proverb that says, it's the glory of God to conceal a matter and the glory of a king to search it out. You speak me in ways that it's creating inside of me an understanding to know you and like to be culturized by you, not just to do something for you.
So he keeps it, would you say then God keeps it vague to initiate and invite you into a pursuit of him?
Like, absolutely.
He gives you just, so it's just a nudge. Whereas if he gave you just too much, it might overwhelm you. Or I guess also, right, in the Old Testament, people sometimes saw God and just died, right? It was just so, like,
well, but you know, you do have,
you
like,
get too much God.
You know, Nebuchadnezzar, you know, and Pharaoh, yeah. They both have dreams. They're both not even Christians. And Joseph even says, isn't God the God who gives interpretations of dreams? I'll give you your interpretation. And he knew that if God had spoken to Pharaoh directly, that Pharaoh wouldn't be as intrigued. Because he already asked all the astrologers. He already asked all the people, like the witch, you know, the witches of the culture, like, tell me, all the spiritual people, like, tell me what this means, and they wouldn't. So he's very, like, I don't know if you've ever had a dream that was important to you, like, in the night, you know, you're like, oh my gosh, I have to figure this out. Like, this, whether it's a psychological dream, a spiritual dream, whatever, I need to figure this out. And he was obsessed. And so finally, someone says, there's this guy in jail who interpreted my dream. I think he might be able to do it. He was willing to take a known criminal who out of jail just in case. I mean, that's how obsessed he was. I don't think that story would have happened if God hadn't hidden himself in something.
I get your things. All right, so yeah, he left just to, it's like a episode of Lost. You had to keep, watching, yeah. You know, to find out what the
it's
truth
progressive.
Is, you know?
You progressively understand who God is through your
Got
life
it.
Journey.
Okay, that makes all right. That makes sense.
But otherwise, we do something for him and not with him, right? Like, he'd give you, you know, Ryan, this is exactly what to do. Here's A, B, and C, and he wouldn't need him to do it other than to say, hey, I need the resources to do it. When are you going to pour out? So whatever. But if he's like, hey, let me take you on a journey where you become who I am, who I've made you to be in your lifetime. And you get to do something with me, not just for me. And he starts to change you from the inside out and actually help you to identify. Like, I think of people like who I really respect, like Carl Lentz in New York. I don't know him at all, but Carl Lentz from Hillsong, New York. And I think of like this guy.
He's probably watching right now.
I'm sure he's not. But I think of him.
Wow, blasted again.
You should have him on. But I think of someone like Carl Lentz. And I think of like, would he have chosen to go to New York and be a pastor? With the kind of gifts he has, he probably has the ability to create finances and resources and empower tons of people. So if you put him in a corporation, he'd probably be leading a Fortune 500 company because he's brilliant. He's a creative genius and he's brilliant. Would he choose to lay down his life to be a controversial pastor in New York who is very misunderstood at times by the greater church and who gets pigeonholed or marginalized at times, but also has a great voice of the church, an incredible voice of the church. But would he have chosen that? So if God told him in the beginning, you will be a pastor, do it this way, da da da, would he have enjoyed it even as much? versus God leading him in different steps and stages to where all of a sudden the culmination of that in this season, who knows, he might recreate himself another season, is to lead something in a really reforming way to the whole church as far as how to love people in a big city that's very liberal and very, you know, anti-evangelicalism. And he's killing it. And I just think of people like that right now that are probably wouldn't have chosen to be pastors or leaders, but God led them a certain way to where they find, like me with a prophetic, like I said no. I was like, God, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do a Christian TV show on this. I don't want to write books on this. I told him early on, like, I don't want to be known for the subject. I want to do this with you, but I don't want to be one of the teachers for this.
You negotiated with God around your vocation. You said, God, I don't want
I told him no. Like, I don't want to do this. If you ask me to do it, I'll do it for you, but this is not what I want. Because I was immature. And I just didn't know. He wasn't asking me at the time. I just was telling him, just so you know, like, I know where this goes.
Her to see
No, I just was like, I was seeing all that. Because you, ultimately, a lot of the things we'll say no to are because we've seen someone brand it wrongly. And so we're like, we don't believe we have enough of God to reform it or to change people's perceptions of it or to do it in a way that's honoring to God or honoring to culture, honoring to love, honoring to people, community. And so I think I just didn't have enough identity yet to where it's like when God actually, I felt like, I don't know what you call it, an assignment or calling or commission or whatever language people would understand to share and write and teach. I was fine with it by the time I did. It still wasn't my favorite thing. Like if you asked me what I wanted to do, I wouldn't have been a minister. I would have been in the entertainment industry and just doing production stuff. So it's hard for me to, and I don't regret, like I don't think like, oh, I wish I was doing that. I have a part of my life that does some of that stuff now, but I just never saw myself going down this road. So when you have this place of, especially when you're hearing from God, he leads you in places you wouldn't go to get a result you wouldn't have had in your lifetime by your own gifts and talents. But he sometimes even takes you to places that you don't have the gifting and talent for when you hear him and purposely puts you there. So that 1 Corinthians 1, the things that are wise there don't look as wise because you show up and they're like, oh, so what college did you go to? And what Ivy League school? And you're like, I went
USC.
To Bible college in Kansas City and didn't finish, you know, like.
Which is, you know, fine institution. Yeah. So basically God knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
And all right. So you mentioned something about you said no to God. This is something that we ask everyone on this show. God has, I'm going to ask you this in a couple parts. You mentioned earlier, God has plans for you, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. God has plans for you. Can you miss out on God's plans and purpose for your life?
Yes.
Scary. Absolutely. Elaborate.
Well, I'll say this. You can miss out, but it's really about obedience. It's not like obedience like just, you know, if you say no to God that one time, you're going to miss it forever. You know, there's those Christians who are like, if I don't evangelize this person, they'll never be evangelized. It's like you are not the Messiah. Yeah. And even in your own life, you're not powerful enough to destroy God's work in your life, but unless you are destroying God's work in your life, meaning like I am called to something and I become a drug addict. And I start selling drugs and I'm now in jail and I'm just called to lead something or to build something and I don't have that opportunity anymore. God will still recreate opportunity to that significance so you can still have impact even in jail if you turn your life to him.
Like Pharaoh might call and need a dream interpreted if you're in
exactly,
jail.
You never know. And we've seen people like, you know, who've come out of those situations and God recreated their whole destiny, what they lost for 20 years, but it's different than he originally intended it. Meaning like there's an A plan, then he recreates an A plan for you. But I've had opportunities I've lost because of just exhaustion or weariness or just not having faith. That's the biggest one, is not having faith that it was really God. Not that I didn't want to do it or whatever, but just not, I couldn't fully partner my faith to it. I almost lost the property we're filming in right now because we had some prophecies, a lot of prophecies about this. And this was a unique, I've never heard anyone who had this many prophecies about a house. I would walk in a room for pastors that are really well known that don't even really prophesy. And they'd say, God's going to give you a property for your destiny so you can do some stuff. And I'd just be like, you know, we had some, and then we had some really specific ones. I'm like,
wow,
that's incredible. And it's in LA, and LA is a really hard place to buy property, especially if we're in Studio City and it's just hard. And so my wife really went on a journey of dreaming of what that could look like. And she had full faith for it and the whole thing. And I took it as like one day this might happen. 20 years from now, I might, you know, do one of my business ventures and it might make a lot of money. We could buy a house. I wasn't thinking of the God component or the God equation, which I think a lot of us don't. And one day, this is one of the internal audible voices of God I heard, where it was beyond my voice in my head. It was a different voice. It wasn't the voice of my conscience. And I don't hear from God like this a lot, but this is one of the times. And I was walking back to my office from lunch when I used to be in Glendale. And I hear God say, so do you want the house I have for you or not? Because you're going to miss it. Because it's Thursday. And he said, it's going to be off the market by Tuesday next week. And I'm like, the first thing I thought is, you didn't tell me afterwards. You're such a God of love. You don't want me to miss it. You know that there's unbelief in me. You know that I don't think like, I'm more of a man where I'm like, I'm going to earn something and make this happen. You know that I don't have faith for, I don't, you know, like, I don't want to even ask anybody for money for a personal house or whatever, even if there's a mission on it. And so there's not a way that I can get this. There's no way that I can produce the income. You know that. And in the midst of that place of unbelief I have and that place of whatever as a man, you're still speaking to me about this. And so I said, okay, God, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry for you have spoken louder than I've ever been spoken to about almost anything. And probably because I needed that level of faith because I didn't believe it. And even when I'm almost missing the opportunity, you speak to me. So I call my wife up. And one of the prophecies was so specific from a really well-known person who does that. And it was the listing name and everything about the listing was in that prophecy. I didn't know that. And I told my wife about, I'd never told her about that prophecy because I was so like not, she was in faith about it. I was kind of like, we'll get a house one day.
How do you broach the subject of, honey, God told me?
I started out saying, I'm really sorry about this. And she laughed. She knew, I think she knew in my, that I was weary when it came to, when you're teaching on the prophetic, you get bombarded with people prophesying over you.
Really?
And I think I was at that stage. It was just a couple years ago, like 4.5 years ago, 5 years ago. I had so much coming at me because people wanted things. Like people would call me up and say, my daughter's missing. These are like well-known people like that are in other ministries and stuff. I never do this, but my daughter's missing. Can you tell me where she is? People call me up and say, I'm on the verge of divorce, like well-known celebrities or whatever. I'm on the verge of divorce. Can you help me? Can you solve this problem for me? Thinking that I have a gift from God, so that means that I can wave a wand and something would happen. So I was exhausted from people's need. I was exhausted from people trying to have significance in my life by trying to give me a word or do something for me. I was exhausted by people's invitations because we have so many invitations to go and do so many different types of things. And so I was just tired and I was, you know, quiet and I didn't know how to put a boundaries to it all. I didn't know how to build a fence around it. You know, and a lot of these people were great people I'm friends with. So I didn't know how to build a fence. So I was in a very unique season in that time. And so to hear God that way, I was like, okay, it was just between me and God. This was not about what I get to do for you, God. This is a father who's like, I have something for you that I planned from the beginning of time so that you can do what you're called to do. Do you want a part of your faith or not? And I'm like, and it was very loving. I'm saying it sarcastically, but it was very Jewish, you know, the way he said it. And because there was a little sarcasm in it. And we got the house. I mean, like it happened in that weekend. We got the house. Like it was just a long story, lots of miracles. We got the house. But I think at that time, like God, a lot of people have the image that if God does speak to me, it's going to be the worst thing that's ever happened, or it's going to make me do something I don't want to do because I've kind of hinted at that. Like I'm doing some things I wouldn't necessarily have signed up for, but that's not who God is. God's like, he's prepared you for things that might be out of your geography or out of your socioeconomic status or whatever, but whether you're poor and it's with rich people, whether you're rich and it's with poor people, like he gives us assignments a lot of times that are kind of, they're not terrible for us, but they're not things that we would have chosen necessarily. But we get this image, like a lot of people are like, am I going to go to Africa if I hear from God right now? Like, is that going to be my life? I have to do something I don't want to do. It's not that you don't want to do it. It's that you would have never chosen it for yourself. Mm-hmm. And I think like for me, I've had to like really look at my heart at times and say, okay, God, I haven't partnered my faith and I've almost missed it here. And I have missed a couple opportunities that you have the right kind of regret. It's not like this introspective, like I have shame. I just know like, I don't want to do that again.
Well, and also if the Christian narrative is that someone is going to exist for eternity, does it kind of also like life matters, but it also doesn't really, right? I mean,
well, it does and it doesn't. Cause I think, you know, we're rewarded based on our faith. And so in heaven, and I don't think there's a class system at all.
Is there envy? I've always wondered, is there envy in heaven?
No, I think like we're stripped from that carnal nature, right? That's what we're dying to here, but we're not stripped from our God nature here. Like there's a nature God made us to walk in on the earth that we're now fully cooperating as Christians, trying to get into that nature of like what it feels like to be in heaven. And I think when we're in heaven, we don't have like this place of regret, but we do have an understanding of what we said no to. And also we know how to say yes to Jesus now. So I think what we do here is actually dress rehearsal for some of the roles we'll take in heaven. I think there's teachers here that are still going to be doing unveiling the mysteries of God in heaven. God never ends. So like we're always going to be discovering new things. I mean, those angels are going around the throne.
So you're still going to be on stage up in heaven.
No,
huh?
No.
Oh man.
Thank you, Jesus. But musicians, they'll still be artists. They'll still be doing art in heaven. We don't know what it looks like. Celestial art. What does that look like? You know, but I mean, we were made for certain roles that keep going. Prophecy ends, but the desire to understand the depth of God doesn't.
So I want to finish with a few sort of just, I don't call them pushback questions, but we've talked a lot about prophecy. Some of this stuff must seem so crazy, right? I mean, I'll admit, I was invited and sort of drugged to an event one time that you were speaking at. And I was like, I'm like, what's this guy doing? Right. And I remember you gave two words to two friends of mine, and I was so just taken aback. I was like, is this stuff even happening? I actually went on to see if I could find some of the information that you gave them in words of knowledge.
Which is smart. That's good.
I test everything. Yeah. You know? And these two cases, I could find a couple things, et cetera. And I thought, well, yeah, it was interesting. Do you think that God leaves plausible deniability with a lot of miracles, that is, he wants to, because I find a lot of things, we did a research report for some work on a girl who had a brain tumor healed, and it seemed to be healed for a year, and then it came back. And brutal, and you wonder, was that, you know, did God heal it? Is there an explanation? We don't know. Do you find that God leaves room for a person to say, you can choose, explainable by man or miraculous nature?
Yeah, I just think life is so mysterious. It's hard to, you know, I have a lot of questions for why certain things like that didn't happen all the way through, or I've said things to people that I've had to go back and take responsibility for and say, I told you that you were going to have this, you know, financial breakthrough and this thing for the building you were purchasing, and it didn't happen at the time.
So it's gone wrong for you a couple times.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the reasons why, when you want to grow and have those guardrails up, you have to track. You have to, like, if you tell someone something's going to happen in the future and you don't go back and ask about it, then they're left to think, like, either the prophetic is all a mess and it's not real, or that God is mad at them and they did something wrong, or that Satan came in and destroyed their opportunity, or that they're a bad person. And so they don't usually blame the prophetic first, though. That's usually the last thing they'll blame. Eventually they might get there. They usually get really mad at God. And so you want to take any excuses to separate from God out of people when it's your responsibility. And so I've had to go back at times, and it's painful. Like, it's funny because there's, you know, like, we live in the information age, so stuff is online. And I think some of that just proves that we hear from God. Other times it could be like, wait a minute, if there's six things you said and six things are online, like, what am I hearing? And so we've actually gone through, like, maybe for 5 or 6 years when I was getting people's birthdays all the time, well, that's one of the first things on Facebook, you know, and I know a lot of Facebook's more private now, but people were like, especially then when Facebook wasn't as private, people were like, are you just going on people's Facebooks and looking? And even I had a friend who, we went to a restaurant together, and he's like, you just go on Facebook? And then I'm so sorry.
Your friends are asking you, is this real, Sean?
Yeah, a couple, not super close friends, but a couple friends were like, I need to know. And most of my friends now hear from God this way to some degree anyways. But this particular person was like more of, I don't know if I fully believe, I love God, but I'm not sure I'm like fully on board. Like, I don't know if Jesus is the only way. And are you looking at Facebook? This scares me. And the waitress came over, and I happened to have a word of knowledge, and part of it was her birthday. And I don't do that all the time. Like, I'm not an evangelist everywhere I go, but it happened to happen in that circumstance. And I wasn't doing it to impress or prove. It just happened. Like, it was just, and my friend was like, okay, like, I get this, but why would God give you stuff that basically like proves this bad case against the prophetic that you all research stuff? I was like, I don't like that. So a couple years ago, we pivoted and said, let's ask God. He's a God of all the universe. Let's ask God for stuff that can't be easily found on a Facebook or whatever. Like, that stuff, like, what's in your safe? What's in your heart? What did you do last night with your wife? Whatever it is, you know, it's like,
it seems a little personal. Well,
but just asking God.
Careful. For
you know, exactly. Be careful. Be careful what you ask for. You don't want to see certain things, but,
yeah, visions, no way.
No. And, but like, let's ask God. And it really changed the conversation for us too, because I feel like we as humans are responsible to actually relate to very real, emotionally intelligent facts. And that was one of the ones that I had to catch up to and go, I'm not proving the case for God in this. And I'm not training people to prove the case for God in this. So let's go after words of knowledge in the information age that still maybe you can find it somewhere online. And maybe, you know, and we did, you know, looked at some of the case against us of, far as people saying he did, you know, in this one conference, three people, we found everything online out of the six people we prophesied over. I'm like, what about the other three? And the first three could just prove that I'm hearing some stuff, but I don't want to even have that argument. So I'm like, let's just ask God to be creative through us, and let's be more creative in how we pursue him. And it's been really beautiful. The last couple of years I've done that with my team and just said, we're not putting rules and restrictions on you. We're just looking at how do we build a protocol that helps people relate to the fullness of God? Because word of knowledge is a gift that's outside time and space that God brings to us. We don't have to just, like, you know the obvious. And so it was really, it's been really good because I think it's like helped a lot of people.
Yeah.
In that journey.
Well, I mean, I may have shared this story with you before we sat down, but I mean, cause I was so, and I'm a skeptic with everything and all this. I want to know the truth wherever it leads. Right. Yeah. And I met a friend in Dallas who actually had gone to a conference with you in Oklahoma City where he was a last minute attendee. And he said that you were up there and this was pre-smartphone. So you had a pen and paper.
I was like 20.
Yeah, you had a pen and paper up there. And he said that Sean Bowles gave me a word that stadiums were in my life. And he's like, my dad had just done a big Promise Keepers event. And so his dad was a sports coach. And he said, you knew our names and the two other guys were there and it read the mail. And he said, but then he said stadiums are in your life. And I just see stadiums. And I remember we were sitting down to breakfast and he had his business card out and I just caught my eye and I looked at it and he was actually one of the top business development guys for stadium sales.
That's so crazy.
At an architecture firm. And he said, you know, man, he's like, there was no phone back then. Right. And so I thought, you know what that was really like, wow. Well, you know, it depended, unless you had, you know, it was a dial up connection, but I don't think that was available back then.
I don't
think
when I was 19, that was there dial up even? I don't know. Like, I feel like I'm that old where I was,
yeah,
like,
right.
Betamax,
you I know? Mean, yeah, it was like Carter was president. Yeah. So I that's a, it was, no, so yeah. it was encouraging to hear. And I said, hey, look what you, he's like, oh my gosh. And that word messed with him 20 years later.
Wow. That's cool.
So it was really cool.
That's really cool.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, because this is the number one question that I've had and people ask when they say, hey, do you really believe in this whole Christian thing? Is just the problem of evil, right? The world. Mm-hmm. And we're sitting here in Studio City in a plush, you know, video game, you know, memorabilia adorned studio, and life's awesome for the most part. But most of life for most of the world, for most of history, has not been awesome.
Yeah.
How do you work that out? And you're really encouraging guy. So I'm curious how you handle that, because a lot of what you see is very encouraging. God loves you, but you know, infant mortality was what, 30% for most of history.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most people never even get a shot to come out. So how do you work out the state of the world with this God of love?
It's one of my things that I won't look away from, because as far as injustice and just man's free choice and what happened in the garden for the Adam and Eve leaving and how we've had whatever, if that's, you know, fully exactly how it happened, or I think it's somewhat of a metaphor, but also it happened. That failure against the nature of God and how we perpetuated so many cycles and things from that, and meeting people who I love, but who also believe completely opposite things that I think are evil. Like, you know, some of the abortion issues or these kinds of things that are like, you're killing children and you have no problem with it. But knowing that your conscience isn't the same conscience that I have about these things, it's like, but then, you know, I grew up as a second generation Christian. And so my parents were really excited to be in the church and they just lived in the bubble of where there wasn't a lot of evil or a lot of evil talked about. And there's this thing inside of me and some of my other family members who were like, we have to see if the kingdom, who God is and his love actually works in harder places. So I call it spiritual mission tourism, but I went around to red light districts and war zones and to like some of the hardest marginalized places, to leper colonies, like for real. Until I was married, I went regularly to these kinds of places to see if the same thing we were preaching all these events and conferences, if we could have Jesus manifest there. And I learned more through the people than they probably learned through me. I mean, I'm taught at pastors' events in Africa with like thousands of pastors and they would tell me their stories. I'm like, you don't need me to teach you what faith is. You guys know you've had to practice love in the midst of persecution and being the persecuted church. And it's just, so I think for me, I know this, that Isaiah 58 is one of my life scriptures. This is the whole chapter. And I look at Jesus, who's never looked away from one act of injustice. And he loves everybody so much and so completely. And he has not only a resolution in place for our generation, if we'll partner our faith to it for certain major issues, but he also has the end in mind. And the end of mine is like his kingdom, it says in Isaiah 9, has only been building ever since it came on his shoulders. It says unto us a son is, you know, being given, and he'll be called Wonderful Counselor and Prince of Peace. And on his shoulders, the government of God will only increase. So I think a lot of times we'll see the evil that's increasing or that's becoming more obvious because we're more educated to it, because I think it's always been there. But there's ways it's increased. But we're, you know, Isaiah 61, where it says, arise and shine, for your light has come, for God's glory is on you. See, thick darkness covers the earth. So it's that evil is covering the earth and the mindset. But when God shows up through his people, that's what the beauty of Christianity. when God shows up through his people, we have different opportunity. And I have more hope now in the midst of evil because we have, you know, like I was doing a study for my latest book that's going to come out at the end of this year. And it's about marketplace people hearing God. And one of the studies was that half of the world's billionaires right now are Christians or profess Christ. The whole church world, the most powerful people group financially is Christians by 51%. So we already have had a great wealth transfer. If you've ever heard that term, it's like that, you know, the wealth of the wicked is laid up for the righteous. There's already been a place where we have the finances to change systemic poverty and to change, you know, the worst case issues, even in 1 or 2 years, if we had the right organization around it. God cares enough to where he's put power in our hands. It's a matter of like, will we love him enough to use it? So for me, I think evil bugs, you know, all of us. It's like, it's one of the, but it's not just like a thorn in our flesh. It's a very real thing that's killing people and hurting people and marginalizing people. And so I feel like when we live a Christianity that doesn't allow ourselves to be gripped with that by compassion, then we don't have real gospel in us.
So is it come back? Is it the same reason you said that God doesn't overwhelm us with direct messages? Is that if he is God, if he is omniscient, omnipresent, all good, then for some reason, letting the world scenario play out this way is better and more glorious than if he had created another way.
I mean, he created it to be perfect, and
but he knew free will was gonna. He knew that free will would lead it down to this disaster.
I don't know, but I think like after all the years, however many, you know, thousands of years, that until he returns again, that something's gonna happen where we will all understand the beauty of why he allowed this to happen. And we'll see a culmination, and we'll be like if you've ever seen a movie where you're like so confused the whole time, and at the end you're like, oh, like The Color Purple is a great movie like that. At the end you're like, oh my gosh, or the Harriet Tubman movie that came out. Those are two more about, you know, slavery and racism and stuff. But the Harriet Tubman movie where you're seeing this woman who has been violated her whole life and then becomes a slave rescuer, who was a slave, who becomes, you know, and had 300 plus slaves get rescued, and she never lost one. And so you see why her life, like why God allowed her life to be just where she just existed in this world that God planned her for one thing, but he restored her to it through the slave, you know, abolitionism. I just think like, we'll look at this, you know, you watch a movie and you're like just crying at the end going, you're so good, God, you knew the end from the beginning. And we're going to look at everyone's stories, like people watch Netflix right now and go, you're good everywhere. You were always good the whole time. We couldn't see it, but you were always good the whole time. And you had a plan to defeat the enemy and the work of darkness the entire time. And you were doing it, but now we knew in part, now we know in full. So I do have hope in that, but I'll say this cause it'll help people. Cause that's a little bit too esoteric. I have a great dad, and he's awesome. Like my dad is just, he's in his 80s now, and he's a terrible driver, but I didn't know that growing up. And there's one time we were driving around a really bad incident, and I didn't know, I was a little kid. And I knew he was a little nervous, and I was like, are we okay, Dad? He's like, oh, yeah, we're fine, because I was too little to know. So he's going to keep me from knowing the evil that's going on. But something really bad was happening, and he drove around it. And I remember years later, I just had this, like, flashback. I was like, Dad, remember we were driving one time, and it was, like, around something, and something really bad was happening? What was it? And he described the scenario, and it was, like, really sad. Like, there was, like, people getting out, and there was, like, a riot going on. And he got around it, and he knew to go a different way. He didn't have GPS at the time. It was in those days. So he didn't know where he was going, but he's like, went around it. And when you trust your father, and you trust that they're good, and you trust that they have your best intention in their heart, there's things you don't need to know, and there's things that you'll find out as you get more mature that you'll have the ground for. Mm-hmm. And you'll go, you know, I trust you, Father, even in the midst of an evil world. Like, there's things I'm not going to understand, but I know you. And that's where most people don't have the relationship to a father who's God, so they can't look at the issue of evil and say, I trust you anyways. They look at God, and they blame him for it.
Got it. Yeah, well, I figured we probably wouldn't solve evil today. I was kind of hoping one day I'm going to have someone on.
Someone will be good. And I'm not
just have
guy.
An explanation for it.
Yeah.
Miracles. We mentioned a lot of supernatural things. A lot of people outside Christianity claim to have miraculous experiences, etc. Are those? Does God work through all faiths? Oh. Does or would you attribute those to? I mean, you mentioned the El Diablo.
Yeah.
Are they necessarily false, you know, miracles to lead people through? How do you interpret one? When people have genuine supernatural experiences.
Yeah, I mean, I think God's working in everybody all the time, but I do think that the enemy counterfeits all the time as well. So I think like God so loved the world. So he's revealing himself all over the world right now. And he uses Christians to bring it into, you know, what his intended purpose through Jesus. but he's trying to get everyone's heart all the time. He's like trying to reveal himself. I think a lot of people, you ask him before they're a Christian, can you see where God ever saved your life? Maybe a car accident or something or whatever. And almost everybody can see how God worked before they were saved. Like, he was always there. He was always present. And we've talked to a lot of Muslims who got saved in the Middle East, and they got saved through a supernatural encounter. And they didn't know who Jesus was for a while. But they knew that there was a God, there's a man of light coming. We talked about that a little bit earlier before the show. And I think personally, like, there's that God's never stopped moving and revealing himself. And then he sends Christians to help, like Daniel or Joseph or Esther, to be at the right place at the right time with understanding, so that people can come to the fullness of what it is. Now, when it comes to cultic or the occult power, I think the enemy tries to mimic or formulate it. I've met people who, they were healed of cancer, but then they got, you know, lupus or something. It's like there's like almost like an exchange, like the enemy like masked the healing. And I've just in my own experience, but I'm not saying it hasn't happened, but in my experience, I've never met someone who's had a healing through a faith healer that didn't have Jesus in their life. But I'm sure there's some out there. I don't have that much life experience, but I have some. I've met a lot of people who've had psychic words or medium words or those kinds of cold readings that weren't linked to a personal relationship with Jesus. And what I've found is that it didn't bring supernatural movement forward in their life. Like, they might've said, "You're dead aunt, I'm seeing her right now. And the last thing you did was fight with her and she wants you to know if she's okay." And that brings encouragement. Like, that's like, wow, I feel so much better because I feel guilt in my last conversation. But when God says it, it's not just information that makes you feel like a little bit better. It's actually like you and your aunt had something going on in your life that was really destructive, a destructive, toxic pattern in your relationship. And God wants to heal your heart. So not only, like, you know, do you not have this sense of regret towards your aunt, but you won't perpetuate that in your life in the future. And I think it's like God's looking at the big picture of people's lives. So usually when prophecy comes, it brings more of a movement forward in someone's life. It can spiritually resolve. It can naturally give them, or can give them natural understanding of themselves and emotional intelligence type thing. And I don't think that happens with the occult, where it actually breaks something off. It usually, there's an exchange, and a lot of it's ritualistic. So there's a ritualistic exchange. You're exchanging one evil for another, or one pattern for another. Whereas God's like, no, you're getting free. You're getting me. You're getting, you know, it's just totally different.
So I guess to sum up, how do you, Sean Bowles, believe that Christianity is true? And are there days when you still, even despite what you've shared, you've seen with us, are there days where you're like, I don't know. Like, do you ever wonder, like, man, am I just making this up in my head some days, or are you past that?
I'm past that. I mean, I think when I was young, because I've been in this for a long time since I was little, I think when I was young, I had thoughts like, are you really the only way, Jesus? Like, I believe in you fully. Like, I never had this time where I walked away from God, or I had like a huge weird—
You never did a big rebellion.
No. Okay. And which is fine when people, I mean, a lot of people go through that. I just didn't, but I had an encounter with his love. So it's like, I just kept looking at him like, you can't deny when you feel like he's revealed himself to you that way. So I'm like, and I just love the Bible. I love worship. I love, you know, connecting to him. So I never had a big, but I've had seasons of discouragement. Most of them happen when there's church politics, like I get caught up in or something, where I'm like, is this like, Christianity, is this like a real thing, or is this just a bubble? And I've gone through that many times. And I think sometimes I still question some of the formalized religion and how we've done it and presented that as like the best way to Jesus. And I think, because I feel like a lot of people who I've talked to have met Jesus outside the context of the organized religious piece where I go to church every Sunday, but they're still professing only Jesus. Like, I still feel like sometimes the decluttering and the decomplicating is really appealing to me. I'm like, I'd love to be like a monk with my wife and just like be really simple, just do our garden. And
I don't know, this house is pretty cool. Like, I don't know about the monkish lifestyle, but it's pretty cool. Yeah. All right, I want to finish with some, just your pastor, you know, we joke, and you were called prophetic man in America, but you're a pastor and you work with a lot of people. You've seen a lot. You've been doing this for decades. What is Pastor Sean Bowles's wisdom for people who say, you know what, I don't hear from God? That's great that Sean gets these visions. That's not me. I read the Bible. It's weird. I don't hear things. Just, you know, it's not me. What do you say to that?
I would say, look for the big wins in your life. If you're like trying to follow God, look for the big wins in your life and then reverse engineer them and think, how did I get here? Did I get myself here, or did God move in my life? And if God moved in my life, or if I can't describe how I got here, if it's like beyond my skill, talent, ability, maybe it's a relationship. Like, I feel like I married an upgrade. I know my wife is better than me. So I'm like,
that seems to be the here. It seems to be the consensus.
So it's like when you look at that and you ask those big questions and you can look for when did I make the choice? What empowered me to make the choice that led to this? And you take yourself out of the winner, being the winner, and you go, okay, God, you actually, God, you actually were here in these moments. And so I want to learn how to partner to those moments. So it's not so much about this is the voice of God, but I'm learning how to partner in my faith. And start there, like start with conviction. Like, do you hear God? Like when you hurt somebody's feelings and you, are you good enough to actually go, oh, I hurt their feelings. I need to really go back and apologize. Or would you in your nature go, I'm going to conflict avoid. Right. So like look for areas where you've had improvements and think about it. Like from the sense of I've invited God to come and lead me in my life and I'm changing and it's not just my good choices and my, you know, grit. I'm actually making choices that are above what I would normally make because there's an interaction. So let me put some definition in the interaction. It doesn't have to be full on like James Earl Jones, God's voice, but But can you see where God's moving? Maybe it's like, you know, they ask for children's workers at your local church and you're single and you all of a sudden volunteer and you're like, why did I want to volunteer my time here? Are you that good-hearted towards children or is God teaching you something and showing you something and inviting you into something? I think that that's where most Christians get stumbled is they're looking for the disruptive voice of God that's so external that makes them do something so beyond them versus that internal, like when I got an opportunity or when I discovered something about myself and I'm like, I'm awesome. I discovered this about myself versus you're awesome. You put me on a journey of self-discovery. How did I have this moment? How can I recreate an awareness to these moments?
Now you've mentioned passion and how that ties into calling and purpose a little bit. So it's interesting debate I see. There's some that say, well, like, look, you know, I imagine myself talking with one of my great grandparents on a farm going like, you know, Dad, I don't feel called to be a farmer. Yeah. And he would go, that's too bad because you're going to farm today or we don't eat. But today we have the choice to, I mean, I hear this all the time. Yeah, this doesn't really fulfill me, you know, and it's over my $5 latte, you know, that we're enjoying. So do we as, you know, do we get permission to just, are you saying that whatever you feel in your heart, passion-wise, is that indicative of where God could be calling someone?
No, I think it's honestly, I think the church has got it wrong. I think we've looked at like our destiny is what we get to do for God, but that's our calling. Our calling is what we get to do for God. And that might be to, I might be a manager at Walmart the rest of my life. You know, like I got to do that with God and I got to use all my skills, talents, whatever it is. And you don't always have a choice of how your calling plays out in the sense of, yeah, you could dream. Yeah, you could, you know, but I mean, there's people who are in marginalized people groups. There's people who are women who would love to do a role like a president, but we haven't had one yet in America at least. So maybe that doesn't mean one can't rise up, but it just, you know, it's, I'm going to be the president is probably the dream of many children, but like, can I do something in that genre and actually make a career out of affecting politics? Probably, especially if you're in a Western country where you can get an education, probably. So that calling, like learning how to serve that sense of calling is important. But even more than that is our destiny is actually to bring Jesus his reward. Our destiny is to love him for the joy set before me endured the cross, Hebrews 12, verse 2. So there's a people group we're called to love. It's a community relationship center. Sometimes it deals with geography, sometimes it deals with industry. Like there's people that we're called to love. And so we want a calling that serves or centers around those people, or at least enables us to do something with those people. Like I've had friends who they couldn't do that as a career, but they could use their career to support like building schools in Africa or something. And so I think like if we could look at it and go in our lifetime, we don't have as many choices as we'd like to believe as far as, you know, career, making money, those kinds of things, especially depending on what country you're in and whatever. And we're right now in an all-time unemployment high around the world because of COVID and whatever. And so we aren't going to be able to say dream and you can be that artist and be self-sustained and self-supporting every time. Like that dream's not going to work for everybody, right? So, but what does work is our who God before time began knew that he was going to give us an opportunity to love on and help them to become what Jesus dreamed of. And a lot of that happens before Christianity of just, you know, sowing belief and encouragement, an atmosphere of, you know, I see you for who you are and not who you're not. I believe in that God's put value in you. Even if you don't use those words, you live your life around them that way. Yeah. It's like St. Francis of Assisi, I preach Christ daily and sometimes I use words. It's that place of having a lifestyle of loving people and seeing God's dream over humanity. That to me is what we all have in common. That to me is what we all have passion for. But the calling sometimes supersedes that. And that's when the church runs over people and there's dead bodies everywhere because my calling becomes more important than you in my calling. And so like, I don't really care about the people. I'm on a mission.
Right.
And so I think I answer that question in a very roundabout way, very specifically, because I feel like all of us can pursue a passion place to love people, and there will be great opportunity and resources and things that will happen in our little life to do that. But it may not be that we can just dream whatever dream and do it, even if we feel like it's a God dream. I've met many disheartened Christians who have hope deferred because they were told their dream should be this grandiose thing versus like, this is the day the Lord's made. I'm going to thrive in this day, even if it's not the job I would have wanted, or when I was a little kid or whatever, I could still love well. I could still, I could still actually have hope. I could still have, you know, that kind of stuff.
So basically though, just because you have a passion for something though, doesn't mean you get, that's what you're called to do, right?
No. And I think you should look at it in view of eternity. Like, this life is so short. And if you have a passion for something, it's going to play out sometime. And we have a hope in Jesus in eternity, but we also have a hope on this world. And I think a lot of people who are like feeling, it's a Hebrews 11, like there's a lot of people who are believing for a lot of things and who are way better at faith than we were. And the last verse says they were left incomplete. So only with future generations could the promises they were believing for be made full. So there's something about us sometimes allowing ourselves to believe and being, that's what intercession or prayer is. It's like we're standing in the gap, which is what the word intercession means. We're standing in the gap between what God wants to bring on the earth and what's already come. So for me, when I moved to LA, I didn't come here as a savior for Hollywood. I came here to reinforce what God was already doing all along and just to play my part in it. And someone else might have a better sense of visible fruit, but I know I'm supposed to love well, be present with people here in the entertainment industry, help them in their calling and their career, do some projects myself. Like, that's one of my passion centers. But I think a lot of Christians get it backwards where like it starts and ends with me. Whatever I don't see, I'm going to be disappointed about.
Hmm. What does prayer look like for you?
16 hours a day.
That's right. Well, you have two, I should say that you have two small children and a wife. Yes, yes. So when you get to pray, what does that look
exactly
like?
Exactly. And I have a big life. So prayer for me, like I decided a long time ago to have prayer be really sacred in the sense that I don't do a lot of second commandment prayer all the time. Like I do, which means devotional lists, whatever. I do that a couple times a week where it's like, I'm praying for the things, the needs we have, praying for my wife, and I do that pretty much every day. But like, but my own devotional time with God, it's like I'm trying to, we have this relationship, the most fascinating being in the universe. You know, if I could have time with Oprah or Bill Gates or Trump or whoever right now, and whether you like those people or not, they're very important in society. If I could have time with them, and if I went in with a huge agenda, I'm like, well, Bill, okay. Anyways, we have 2 minutes left, go. And you have this incredible person who's way more life experience than I do, and I'm the one with the agenda. There's something really imbalanced about that. So I've tried to clear myself and just go, I'm going to read some of the word and try and use, a lot of times I'll use other people's tracks of Bible studies and stuff too, and go on a Bible study track. And then I clear myself and I just pray. And I just, here I am, you know, Samuel, like, what are you saying, God? You know, and listen. And I just, you know, do a lot of just contemplative thinking, just think about, you know, and prayer and Christian meditation, just focusing on Jesus, clear myself of everything else. And so that's my daily, my sometimes daily too is devotional stuff, or I mean, second commandment stuff, or praying for the world, praying for all the needs. And then I do that as a job because of a ministry. I do that as a job at times too. But if I mix that all in together, then it becomes very convoluted. Like going on date night with my wife and talking about how we're going to manage our life the next week, and we don't have intimacy. It's like, we need to have times where we share our hearts, not just.
All right. Now you've mentioned your lovely wife several times. And as a pastor, I imagine you've married some couples. You've been a part of a lot of people's journey. Yeah. What is a pastor's advice for Christians, non-Christians, all alike, on finding love and making love work?
Don't be the most powerful person in the relationship, but share your power. Because I think like a lot of us are independent and powerful. And when you get married, you're getting married to that person's the most powerful person beside you in your life. They go to bed with you. They can talk to you about almost anything can be on the table. And I think a lot of us who get into marriage when we have very different ideas and we start, especially the first year, a lot of conflict comes up where it's like, I don't know if I want to be married to you in this area. We're not very compatible because you don't know how to listen to someone and share your power. A lot of, especially men, like we have things we're already doing that somebody comes into our life and they, whether you have a business, a construction business, or you're a pastor or whatever, and all of a sudden the woman has a voice into it and you're like, why are you talking about things you don't know about? You know, like that kind of thing. So that's one example. But I think if we can share from the beginning, like say, I'm going to allow you, look at you as an asset and a team member in my heart. I'm going to be one to you as well. And I'm going to include you in the most vulnerable parts of my heart process and listen to you even when I don't want to hear what you're saying, and weigh that against my internal life. that you'll be light years ahead of everybody else.
That's amazing. Well, even though you've stated that we are eternal beings, it appears that our time here on this show is coming to an end.
It's done.
But thank you so much. I did want to give you a chance. You mentioned you've got a couple cool projects and some stuff you're working on. You know, obviously, I'll put this in the show notes so people can, you know, reach out, bombard you with more prophetic words. But yes. What are you working on right now?
So we have a online platform. It's like 5 videos a week that people can subscribe to. And it's amazing. It's some of it's me, some of it's some of our friends, but we're training people how to, with revelation they're getting, how to apply and interpret what to do with it. Because that's one of the big missing pieces. What do I do with this now that I have it? And it's ongoing. It's an ongoing discussion. And we have a lot of e-courses and stuff that come with that platform. Then we have a free YouTube show. It's a series on processing your journey together in the prophetic. We have a TBN show. That's one of the major Christian television networks. It's on Monday nights at 7 p.m. It's called Transcend God, off of my best-selling book. And we have a lot of free resources. My podcast is phenomenal. It's so much fun because everybody else's story is besides
mine.
And that's
mine. Like 3 million downloads.
No, right? Like 6 million downloads. It's great. It's amazing. I don't say like in pride of myself. I just love that conversation is getting bigger. And I hope a lot of different people have it in a lot of different ways for what God's doing. And then my new book is coming out, which is really cool. It's called Provision, Prophecies, Prayers, and Declarations. So it's actually a prayer book where you look over 10 areas of life, like family, finances, those areas, and apply God as a provider, Jehovah Jireh, that's one of his names in the Bible, in those areas, and learn how to like think with like well-constructed prayers over your life about it, and then also to make some declarations. And then I put some prophecies. I sat down and I prayed, and I actually had what I believe is general or generic prophecy, which is very specific to people, but like when you read it, it's really good. We did one last year called Breakthrough, same kind of thing, prophecies, prayers, and declarations, and it's I've never had so much good feedback in my life, so this is the follow-up to it.
That's awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for being here on the show and actually letting us come to you in this awesome, awesome space.
Well, thank you.
I'd give you a hug, but COVID. So thank you so much.
I love you.
Thank you so much for listening to Kinda Christian. Hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please subscribe and leave us a 5-star review.